morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am your host and tour guide, Yada. Each weekday morning, I strive to expose the beguiling and destructive myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism in the media, and with military and economic schemes. If you listen, your eyes may be opened and you may ultimately change your mind towards some of these human institutions. Instead of merely presenting the news this morning, my mission will be to help you understand what is occurring behind these headlines, all while predicting how the events that they describe will shape our world over the next 20 years. Then, during our second hour, we're going to engage Yahweh on his terms, by way of his one and only covenant, and through his always dependable Torah teaching, so that with his guidance you will be able to replace your religion with reason and engage in a relationship with God. Our phone number, if you'd like to engage in this discussion, is 877-300-7645. Well, all of the talk today in the news is about tottering off the physical cliff. It literally dominates the headlines. What strikes me as enlightening about this is that across every media outlet, the thought, the prospect of meaningfully cutting government spending across the board and meaningfully increasing revenue in a fair and equitable way is considered a disaster to be avoided at all costs. One so bad that the only reason that these consequences may be averted is because no one wants to be blamed for doing the right thing. Think about that. Government spending has increased. Go ahead.
I thought it was the rich people weren't paying enough. Isn't that what they're telling me?
That's certainly what they're telling you. You know, the Bush tax cuts, what they did isn't so much lower the amount the most prolific wage earners, the most effective wage earners make and get to keep, because their rate went down 4%. What it did is it took enormous numbers of people, tens of millions of them, out of the tax rolls so that they no longer have any skin in the game. They represent that 47% of the people that were spoken of in this last election. They don't have any skin in the game. They don't participate in covering any of the costs of their government, and yet they're the same people, in many cases, who received checks from the government.
Well,
and what it also did is it lowered the effective tax rate of the medium income Americans to 5%. It's 10% on the books if the effective rate is 5%. And so what we have is half of Americans no longer paying any tax, and about 25% of Americans paying so insignificantly as to make no meaningful contribution, which means the top 25% of wage earners are pulling this whole damn ship.
What?
And it is about ready to break them. You know, this is a case of Atlas Shrugs. They're about ready to say, you know, not going to play this game anymore. It's what's happening right now in France. Not going to play this game anymore.
Well, look at Mitt Romney. He paid, what, $3 million in taxes last year?
Yes.
He did that in 1 year, and that was last year. He's probably been paying that every year, over and over.
Yes. Said Obama paid a few hundred thousand dollars, and Obama criticized Mitt Romney for paying too little.
Exactly. So
when you go to the grocery store tomorrow, do you think you're going to be able to pay with percentages?
No, but here's the other thing is that as far as Obama saying that, Obama doesn't pay any of his bills right now.
He doesn't, of course not.
For free and clear. So
right.
So, I mean, let's really get into that. I mean, we can get into that, but think about that. $3 million. Let's say he paid that every year for the last 10 years. That's $30 million that he's put into a system. Me, myself, I've worked since I was 14 years old, and I will never, unless I figure something out and do something phenomenally right, I will never pay even $3 million in taxes.
Well, you know, I hope that your talent put you in a position where you will one day be in that same boat. It is the, it is what we would call the American dream, but in today's mindset in America, it is considered evil to be successful, and it is assumed that those who are successful pay nothing to the government, when in fact it is those who are the most successful that are pulling almost the entire load of the federal government and getting virtually nothing from it, because they're disqualified from all government programs. But here we have a fiscal cliff. The term was created by the International Monetary Fund. It's had a French woman almost 2 years ago. And you have all of the United States media outlets speaking of this this thing as if it were a runaway train. They're not speaking of the problem. What is the problem? The problem is the government spends way too much. The government, federal government's spending is increasing way too fast, and we have accumulated over $16 trillion in deficit, which is more than 100% of our GDP. Oh. That is the problem. And no one is talking about the problem. They're instead talking about how bad the solution to the problem is.
Well, even look at the you know, everything you're hearing right now is that it's the Republicans' fault. It's the Republicans' fault. It's both their fault. But it seems to me like they're also worried about getting reelected. That
yes,
that oh my, we can't say what the real problem is, because you know, you've talked about this before. Nobody wants to hear what the real problem is, because then, you know, we have problems.
The real problem is Social Security is a Ponzi scheme. The real problem is Medicare and Medicaid are Ponzi schemes. The real problem is that the United States government spending has increased way too fast. And no one wants to deal with the fact that the United States is amongst, in fact, is not among the most, is the most indebted nation on earth. That rather than being the great economic engine of the world, we're now the world's largest debtor. And no one wants to talk about the consequence of the United States borrowing all this money and how it has taken money that would have otherwise been available to businesses for them to grow and expand, and has instead redistributed that money to people who did nothing to earn it.
Well,
and it has crippled the U.S. economy and has destroyed the future for our children.
That, yeah, I was going to say, that's not going to affect you or my, that's not going to affect my parents or you.
Right.
It's going to affect me.
Us old guys.
Your sons, you know, my kids, it will affect everybody, but except for
so, so, Scott, how is it possible that we could be so inundated with chatter about how disastrous this fiscal cliff is, when all the fiscal cliff does is it spreads out the tax burden, making it considerably more fair, and increases revenue, while at the same time taking meaningful cuts across the board in all areas of government spending? Why, when two things which are necessary to resolve this catastrophe that we're in, why are they being universally presented as horrible? Why is the solution to the problem considered bad? And why is the problem itself not even being discussed?
Because they've turned it into people that are wealthy are our enemies.
Class welfare.
Yeah.
Warfare.
They've turned it into a class warfare thing, whereas I look at somebody that has, you know, wealth, and I say to myself, wow, good for that guy. What can I do to get there? You know, what can I do? You want to be wealthy. You should want to be wealthy. You should want to work hard and be very good at something so that way you can get paid a substantial wage for it.
Yeah, but what we have done in a country that used to be driven by free enterprise is that we have nationally made it such that those who succeed are considered evil.
What?
And those who fail are considered a good.
Well,
and so it's just like our moral code of political correctness. We've literally turned the world upside down. And the sad thing is, the reason, Scott, that we're having this discussion about the physical cliff being bad as opposed to good. I mean, it is really, it is the solution that America needs. In fact, it just doesn't go far enough. Is that the mindset of Americans have changed so that most Americans now think that they're entitled and that it is good, moral, and appropriate for them not only to take from those who have been effective in business, but also to steal from their children. And they think that is moral, fair, and good.
Well, the real problem is it's a lack of, my opinion here is that it's a lack of personal responsibility. Society has given everybody an excuse. It's not my fault because. Just think about what I said. I'm not a wealthy man yet because I haven't figured out how to do it. Where to go with that and how to make it. I'm not blaming that on anybody else. I mean, do I work hard? Yes, I work hard. You know, I'm an extremely good employee, but you don't make money by working for other people. You have to work for yourself. And so,
which takes enormous risk. You have to raise capital. You've got to come up with a new or improved idea, and you have to execute on that idea very effectively. I mean, it's 99% out of every 100 new ideas that people launch into companies fail. Well, and so it's extraordinarily challenging to prevail. And now you've got the whole government and not only the tax system, but regulations and lending systems working against the individual who would like to start a new business.
Again, all that risk that you talked about, that all that is accepting responsibility, understanding what's going on, and you're accepting the consequences that come with it, but you also see the goal at the end.
What did Yahweh say about the notion of being dependent upon your country, as the majority of Americans are now?
You're supposed to walk away from it. You're not supposed to rely on any man-made thing.
One of the reasons that he said that is, of course, because he wants us to rely on him instead and to trust him instead. But it's also because when people in mass do what Americans are doing, which is becoming dependent upon their country fails. And it fails them. And it fails their children. And it makes life miserable for everyone. And that is what we have done and are doing to ourselves. And when we strive to fix it, the fix is condemned. I'm Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. I'm a little bit crippled this morning, as you may have noticed in the tone of my voice. I picked up a very nasty sinus infection over the weekend, and it has turned my throat into a war zone. So I apologize for the lack of resonance and tone this morning. Returning to the subject that we've been discussing, which is the physical cliff, I want to go back over why it is in our interest to embrace the things that will happen if no compromise is reached. Now, I'm of the opinion, and it's just an opinion, I'm not a prophet here, but I'm of the opinion that a compromise will be reached because both parties fear the ramifications and the tongue lashing that they will take in the media and the reaction of the majority of people who just want to sock it to the rich and take their money and give it to me. Since that's the majority of Americans now, politicians are afraid of doing the right thing. So I think that a compromise will probably be reached, but it is not in America's interest. Here's the reason that we need to not reach a compromise, though. The Bush tax cuts, the primary thing they did was to take tens of millions of taxpayers off the tax roll so that they no longer contribute. If you do not contribute to something, if you pay nothing for it, if you are a net beneficiary of something, your whole mindset changes. You don't take responsibility for yourself. You become dependent upon the government. You actually embrace this moral disconnect of thinking that it's appropriate to steal from some people so that who have earned something so that you who have not earned it can have it. That's just, it is a direct violation of Yahweh's instructions as he etched them in stone. It's covetousness and it's greed. And then those very same people blame those who have actually earned what they have of being greedy, as opposed to applying the label to themselves when they take that which they did not earn because they simply want it. The second aspect of the Bush tax cuts is it cut by one-third the amount that the average wage earner in America pays. The average wage earner is about $60,000 a year. And it cut by one-third the amount that they paid to the point where their actual contribution is so negligible that they aren't meaningful contributors to anything that is valuable in the country. And there are some things that the country does that have merit, and they're not meaningful contributors anymore. And so that is a problem. You need to have every American make a contribution. And number two, those who make contributions, the 75% of Americans, the contribution has to be meaningful. And if we do not reach a compromise, both of those two things move in the right direction. More Americans will pay some tax, and the average American will pay at least a meaningful tax. They will pay an effective tax rate of about 10%. The increase on the most productive wage earners is about 4%. And because it is so minuscule, 10% by percentage, you know, if you compare, they're going to go from 35 to 39%. 4% in real terms, and by comparison, it is a 10% increase in their rate. Well, that is counterproductive to get the benefits of everybody paying a fairer share, and that's a worthy thing to do, because unless more Americans have meaningful skin in the game, the likelihood of them exercising good judgment regarding economics is non-existent. The other issue is that if we reach no compromise, then government spending is actually going to be cut. And this is not cutting future rate of increases. This is actually cutting government spending. That's not cutting it by much. We're probably dealing with a $400,000 or $400 million in revenue increases and $200 billion worth of actual cuts. But we need to cut the federal government by 50% to have any chance of surviving as a nation. And so an initial cut would at least be a step in the right direction. And yet all of the discussion is about how terrible this will be if we do the right things, both on the revenue side and on the spending side. And so, you know, you read headlines and it says U.S. politicians are prepared for last-minute talks to avoid the fiscal crunch of spending cuts and tax hikes that could drag down the world economy in 2013, not just the American economy. Oh, just consider the horror of doing the right thing, of being responsible, for encouraging people to contribute as opposed to being dependent. We'll return to Shattering Myths after the break. To Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. If you would like to engage in this discussion, you're welcome to call 877-300-7645. Going on with the headlines, we read, speaking of the fiscal cliff, that the two political parties are set to hold further talks to try to avoid the $600 billion fiscal cliff, as it's being called, from kicking in at the start of January, which, if left unchecked, could wipe out 4% of U.S. GDP. Now imagine that. that this brainchild decided what I'm going to do here is I'm going to take $600 billion and I'm going to divide it by the U.S. GDP, which is about $15 trillion, and it's going to come to 4%. And so I'm going to say that having Americans pay some additional taxes and making the tax burden more fair and cutting the amount of government spending so that we don't increase the deficit further is going to wipe out GDP. I mean, how utterly stupid is that? And yet, that's the way that our headlines read. And it's being presented as doing the right thing on both sides is this terrible tragedy that will wipe out the American economy.
So their plan is to keep doing what we've been doing, and that should get us a different result?
Well, yeah, I think so. I think if we continue to let government spending go unchecked, particularly in the big areas, which are Social Security and Medicare and defense, that if we continue to allow government spending in those three areas to go unchecked, and we continue to exclude the preponderance of Americans from paying either any tax or a meaningful tax, that hey, everything will be just fine because there's probably no correlation between those things and $16 trillion in national deficit. It is stunning. So on Sunday, President Barack Obama blamed Republicans for the deadlock. No, it's not his fault for not being willing to offer any meaningful spending cuts. Not his fault for not being willing to do that. Not his fault for not being willing to have a more equitable approach to taxation. Not his fault. It's the Republicans' fault. And without an agreement, higher taxes will rise for virtually every working American. What's interesting, of course, is they don't want to include those who make over $250,000 a year. They don't want to include them in the concept of working Americans. What they want to do is look at the average Joe six-pack as a working American and not include the people that are the largest wage earners. But anyway, it talks about taxes will increase for virtually every American. Now, that's not true, by the way. The majority of Americans will still pay no tax, even if this does kick in. And it also doesn't contemplate the reality of making whatever they do retroactive. Continuing with the story, we read that this current standoff, we are told, and it's some truth to this, has its roots in a failed 2011 attempt to tackle the government debt and limit the budget deficit. You see, in 2011, a year ago, we reached an impasse where we were up against the debt ceiling. I think at the time it was 14 trillion in change. And Obama, you know, just told the world that the Republicans had simply increased the debt ceiling and allow business as usual, because, of course, continuing to do the same thing will yield a different result, right? That's the definition of insanity, by the way. And so the Republicans said, all right, you've painted us in a corner. You've offered us nothing for this, for us increasing the debt ceiling from 14 to $16 trillion. So we'll do so, but we're going to do so in a way that if we can't come up with some kind of an agreement over the next year, that it will put into effect meaningful government spending reductions and will make the tax burden more equitable. And that is what we're facing now, and it's because the last time we went through this, Obama offered nothing regarding spending cuts. And this is a spending problem, my friend. We have Will calling in from Iowa. Good morning, Will. How are you?
Morning, Yada. How are you doing this morning?
Yeah, I'm struggling with a bit of a scratchy throat, but sometimes you just have to play wounded.
Yes, I've been down that road a lot of times.
Yes. Hey, you wanted to speak about government assistance?
Yes, I did. My wife and I, a few years ago with our daughter, I talked to her about her before. She's 24 right now, and like I said, she has the mind of a six-month-old child. And when she turned 18, I suggested to the DHS, said, well, you know, we think that the parents, you know, obligation to take care of the child. I said, I understand. But I threw their laws back in their face. I said, she is, I've been paying into the system for many years working, and she's a legal adult now. And we don't want to put her in a home. We don't want to do that. We want to take care of her and always provide for her. And so we do, my wife does get paid taking care of her. So she is working, and I work too. You know, I help take care of her. So we're not violating the Yas covenant, are we?
No. Yeah, first of all, there are things that the government can and should do that are beneficial. And one of those things that government can and should do, human institutions can and should do, is to take care of those who have genuine needs. When it comes to those who are physically and mentally handicapped, I think there should be a very high standard for what we are willing to do on behalf of those individuals. So I happen to be extraordinarily bullish on the idea of providing societal help to help offset the burden, the cost burden, that someone has if they have a physically or mentally handicapped child that is part of their, or an orphan child even, that is part of their family or part of their community. And so in this particular case, no, I think you're absolutely fine. And really the issue is, it gets down to attitude anyway, Will.
I see a lot of people
we
get assistance, and they don't really do anything. Not one thing.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So,
and that's people that take the food stamps and take food stamps and spend them lavishly, which is 45 million Americans, and those who are on welfare and the like, and do nothing for them. There's something wrong with their attitude. That really is inappropriate, and we ought not be doing those kinds of things as a society. And what God is saying is if you're going to vote yourself these kind of entitlements, if you're going to become dependent upon your government, then you're not reliant on me. And if you're not reliant on me, then we don't have a relationship. Because the relationship that I have established with you, the intent is for you to rely on me as your father, and as the head of the covenant, as opposed to you to rely on human institutions, which will fail you. And so, go ahead, Will.
They don't pay a lot to us to take care of her. I'll put it that way. That's why I went back to school.
That's why I'm suggesting that so long as your attitude is right, so that you're not thinking yourself entitled and you don't become dependent, but it is a help for a difficult situation, then attitudinally you're fine. It's, God knows that we live in a world where it is impossible to completely walk away from every government. It is absolutely impossible. Do I like paying taxes knowing that a disproportionate amount of my taxes go to things that are counterproductive? No, I hate it.
But,
for me to say I'm not going to pay anymore, you end up in jail, and you have no opportunity to, for example, to participate in this particular mission. So, we all have to be involved in one level or another of human institutions. It's just that it's our attitude towards them that is important to God. Yeah, are those institutions upon them? Are you reliant, or are you instead reliant on Yahweh's guidance and His provision?
Well, I'm reliant on Yah's guidance and provision in following His Moed Mikdash and understanding really what they truly mean and getting away from the religious stuff like the one time like that we went Sukkah. They were taking a prayer shawl and putting all the children in praying for them. I thought, well, this seems kind of religious to me. Okay.
Yes.
I mean, we just need to talk with Him and play music anytime you feel like it. He loves, I love playing music
for Him
a lot, and I love to cook, and I always invite Him. Hey, if you ever want to come here and have a meal, you're always welcome. I extend an invitation to God.
Yeah. And that's really the right attitude. It's, do you view God as your heavenly Father, who whose guidance is useful for your temporal and eternal growth, and appropriate and reliable for your family's eternal future?
Yeah,
and if that is
there's one thing I want to do with my father one of these times, and I cannot wait for this, because I think he will. When he materializes himself in a physical form, even though he's still spiritual,
yes.
I want to literally wrestle with him for fun.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and I think, and I think that, yeah, I think that is an aspect of him that is true. The very term that he uses to describe his chosen people is Yisrael, and it's a compound of three Hebrew terms: Ish, which is individuals; Sarah, which means to engage with, to wrestle with, to strive with, to endure with; and El, which is God. So, if God were not interested in the idea of us wrestling with him, and you know, it could be physical wrestling just because it's fun.
Yeah.
Because we are going to be empowered as his children. It, you know, it's not like there's going to be this enormous disparity between us in eternity. So, and when he takes on when he diminishes an aspect of himself to take on physical form, then he becomes diminished like us in our present state. So in either way, it's a it is certainly a possibility. I had not considered that myself. I am content just to get a hug, and my favorite.
Yeah, like also, but you know, I just I remember times when I wrestled with my dad, and it was kind of fun.
Yeah, I agree with you. Well, thank you for calling, Will, and I hope we've resolved your concern. We'll return to Shattering Myths after the break. We'd encourage you to call if you have a question or concern, 877-300-7645. Hello, and welcome back to the final news segment of Shattering Myths. This is the line that I found from Reuters that would was interesting. It said, late on Sunday, Senate Republicans said that they were dropping their proposal to slow the growth of Social Security payments. The plan, which would have led to lower benefits to pensioners and the disabled, had been fiercely resisted by Democrats. The only discussion of a reduction in the rate of increase of government spending that has been proposed by President Obama has been to reduce the rate of growth of Social Security payments. That's been it. And he has even waffled on that. He has been unwilling to discuss a decrease in Medicare or Medicaid. And, of course, Republicans have no interest in cutting defense. And so the one place where there was at least some discussion was in slowing the rate of increase in Social Security payments is now off the table, which means there is absolutely nothing that is being discussed on the spending side of this equation. And the problem is entirely spending. So if we were to reach a compromise, it would only mean that the Republicans cave and they keep the majority of Americans off the tax rolls, and they keep average Americans paying actually too little tax, so that they can raise the tax on the rich and be considered fair. It's a very, very bad deal. And so I would hope that there would be somebody in Washington with enough backbone to say, no, we're just not going to do any of these things. Turning to another place in the world where there is nothing but bad news, we We're in the midst of a story several days ago about the deepening religious violence in Syria and how everyone that had come to, that the majority of those who are fighting now in Syria had actually come into Syria with the express purpose of being a jihadist, and that all of the guns and weapons that were being wielded by the opposition have been supplied by the Sauds and by the Qataris for the express purpose of igniting a religious civil war in Syria where Sunnis could oppose Shia. And it is stunning that that even the press knows that the forces that are fighting in Syria represent the very same jihadists that they were fighting in Iraq. Our enemies in Iraq, our enemies in Afghanistan, America's opposition in Libya, for example, the most fundamentalist Muslims from Egypt, they are now jihadists fighting in Syria. Hamas, for example, terrorists, fighting in Syria, being armed indirectly by the United States. And even knowing this to be a fact, that if the Assad government is toppled and that these forces prevail, that it will be the same situation that we witnessed in Egypt, the same situation that we witnessed in Iraq, where a bad situation becomes infinitely worse. The United States has now recognized the Syrian opposition as if it were comprised of freedom fighters. It is comprised of fundamentalist Muslims. And as fundamentalist Muslims, the moment they gain control of the country, they will impose Sharia law. And the 10% Christians who are on the side of Assad, because they know what will happen if he falls, will be annihilated. And the Shia Muslims, who will become victimized by their Sunni opponents. But before any of that happens, if the United States continues to arm the rebels in Syria, Hezbollah will engage, and they are very well equipped. And if Hezbollah engages, and you not only have the Syrian military, but perhaps the largest and best equipped terrorist or Islamic terrorist organization in the world in Hezbollah, engaged in this battle. Can you imagine the carnage that is going to result? The decision that was so foolish here was when the United States decided that it would supply weapons to Qatar and Saudi Arabia and then silently, quietly encourage Qatar and Saudi Arabia to supply weapons to the Sunni protesters, which turned a peaceful protest into a civil war, and hundreds of thousands of people will lose their lives because of that decision. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. We'll be back in a moment.
For health and vitality for you, your family, and friends, get the Healthy Start Pack from Youngevity, as recommended by registered pharmacist.